it's very difficult to explain one's own memory to someone else, but there's also this curious thing that even shared memories are not the same.
Hello and welcome to this Short Fiction Masterclass, brought to you by Thresholds, the International Short Story Forum, in collaboration with the Charleston Trust. My name is Jack Catania, and today I'm in the Charleston Farmhouse kitchen, where Dame Penelope Lively and I are sheltering from the rain. Penelope Lively began her writing career as a children's author, winning the Carnegie Medal and the Whitbread Children's Book Award. Her move to adult fiction was equally successful. The Booker Prize numbers among her many literary accolades. She has published volumes of autobiography and non-fiction, as well as radio and television scripts. Penelope is a Fellow of the Royal Society of Literature, a Vice President of the Friends of the British Library, and a former Chairman of the Society of Authors. In this masterclass, she is going to talk about her recent short fiction collection, The Purple Swamp Hen and Other Stories. To echoes of Charleston's domestic life, we will explore the relationship of the past to the present, the nature of memory, and the ultimate unknowability of other people. Welcome, Penelope. Thank you so much for talking to us. You've agreed to read the beginning of one of the short stories in your collection, The Purple Swamp Hen and Other Stories, and it's the first page of a story called License to Kill.
Yes, right. Coat, she said. No, the red one, please. The girl got the red one, stood there with it. Scarf, please, grey scarf. Shopping list, said the girl, pouncing, triumphant. Put butter, I forgot, and J-cloths. She was 86 and forgot much. The mind was porous. Some things lodged, others did not. The girl wrote and drew a cat with whiskers, back view of, and a smiley face. She was 18. Might try that Aussie shampoo. Might go to Oxford Street with Lindy at the weekend. They were out at the front door. Callie said, shall I do the mortise lock, Pauline? Yes, do it. The agency had asked if she would rather be Miss, and she'd said not. Hospitals don't know either, one had noticed. Neither here nor there, as far as she was concerned, so long as they knew who you were. Slow and careful on the steps for her. Callie jumped the last three, stood at the bottom checking her phone, remembered she wasn't supposed to when working, shoved it in her pocket. She said, shall we get a coffee when we're in Mark's? Pauline considered. Coffee, and one might need a loo before this shopping expedition is done. There's the bank, and there's Boots. Maybe. You plot daily. Pace down circumstance. Measure out your life with, not coffee spoons, pills. Line them up with breakfast, lunch, supper. Never mind mermaids and lilacs in bloom and all that stuff. He hadn't a clue. In his 20s, wasn't he? It's pills, and have I phoned the surgery, and shall I pay that gas bill, and have I got my debit card?
Thank you. Can you tell us about the story? It seems to have some of the themes in your collection that are running through several stories. One of them is the relationship of the past to the present. So the character, the main character, the point of view character in that story is somebody who has a past which is interesting and unusual and unknown to the young
yes,
woman.
Yes, indeed. She's
her.
Nothing like the girl who likes her well enough is thinking that she's just an old lady, and old ladies are all the same, aren't they? But of course she isn't. She's had actually a rather interesting and exotic past. And I think when you get to my age, I'm 84, you realise how old people are quite often taken for granted. What is forgotten is that they have a sort of vapour trail of memory behind them of everything that they have been and that they have done. And so they're all distinctive. And not everybody is like that. I mean, like that in their perceptions of the old. Most people are much better, but there are people who are like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's something also about how we can never really know another person that seems to come through in many of these stories.
Yes, it does. I mean, I think even people that you think you know very well, there are aspects of them that you're not aware of, and which is why they can sometimes behave in ways that surprise you.
Mm.
And I think that for any novelist or any fiction writer, that's an interesting sort of theme to explore.
And I think you explore it in quite a few quite interesting ways. Mm. There is a story called A Biography where somebody is interviewing the associates, relatives, ex-lovers, ex-spouses of someone who died at the age of 70. So she's had a life. And the reader is getting a piece together, jigsaw, of what people are telling her, but also a little bit of backstory about what they're not telling her. And yet, it seems to me that the person who claims to know her the best is actually somebody who doesn't know one of the key facts about her.
Well, I think I was thinking in that story a bit about the act of writing a biography. I mean, no biographer absolutely knows their subject, which is why many subjects demand various biographers who will always interpret differently. But there's the sense in which somebody being spoken to, interviewed by a biographer, will only tell a partial truth, probably. They're very likely to say what suits them rather than telling a whole truth. So that what this fictional biographer is getting is smatterings of truth from the various people she talks to, with a great deal that is never exposed at all. So that at the end, I think you come away with the feeling that her biography adds up to a very partial account of her life.
Exactly. And we get the publicity blurb for the biography right at the end of the story, and yet the reader's party to some knowledge that none of the other characters have fully got a clear picture of. May I read this very, I thought, arresting line from the story? "She is in my head, Lavinia. I see her and hear her, what we call memory, but I can't pass that on to you." And there is that sense of our memories are so personal, they're so held within our consciousness that that's impossible to pass on.
Absolutely. I mean, there's this extraordinary kind of deceptive quality that memory has. It's very difficult to explain one's own memory to someone else, but there's also this curious thing that even shared memories are not the same.
Exactly.
So that, you know, even with those closest to you, like your partner or your children, your shared memory of some experience will be very different, in fact. So that it's the same kind of thing as conflicting evidence in history, and sort of in public life, in private life, there's all sorts of conflicting evidence as well. And this is always fascinating for a fiction writer, I think, to explore that. But.
So do you think it's the writer's role to become a recorder of history? Do you think that, in a sense, the writer is trying to capture these things or trying to capture memory?
Well, it's amongst the many things a writer does. I mean, inevitably, a writer is a social commentator. I mean, you're reflecting your own times and your own circumstances. You not only can't help doing that, but I think you ought to be doing that. I certainly in no sense would think of myself as a historian. The sort of converse of that is that if I want to know about anywhere's past, about the history of a place, I go to the novelists. You go to the 19th century novelist to know what it was like to live in the 19th century, what 19th century was history was like. I actually read history at university, and it always surprises me that none of my tutors ever told me to read George Eliot, or they should have done, because that's as much as part of the sort of, you know, the historical commentary. But I doubt if she thought of herself as being a commentator on history at the time, and I certainly don't think that. I spring from a particular set of social and cultural circumstances, so inevitably I reflect those.
I think in your Purple Swan Hen, you have the Purple Swan Hen is a wonderful figure that comments on, it's kind of a ghost figure who comments on the centuries that will follow and says, I can't comment on whether progress is a good thing, but things are just being done differently in the future. And that's the sense that we all are at the crossroads of history, aren't we? And I particularly like your stories where you're talking about the change in social mores, where perhaps people are doing things differently from the generations before. There's a story where a mother is trying to marry off her three daughters, and by the time the third daughter is due for this process, the 60s have happened, and she's going to follow another path. Those sorts of things come up
yes,
with these
well,
stories.
Yes, well, quite. I mean, if you're towards the end of a long writing life, you've seen a lot of social change, so that's bound to be reflected as well, and that's quite important, I think.
And does a short story do something different from a novel in this sense, do you feel?
Probably, yes. I mean, there's the sense in which, you know, a short story is much more like a snapshot, a photograph, whereas a novel is a much longer consideration. I mean, I think both can do that, but the short story can do it in a sort of sharper and more succinct way, I think. Yeah, perhaps make the point more sharply. Mm.
And you've said that your process of writing short stories is different from a novel, that you hadn't written short stories for a while before you began the stories in this anthology.
That's right, yes. I hadn't written any for about 20 years. I was very surprised they suddenly came back again. Very different, yes. I mean, I was saying the novel, writing a novel is like hacking at the rock face. You have this large idea about what you think the novel is about, and then you're hacking away to try to find the characters and the... And the story that's going to be the vehicle for this idea. Whereas the short story is utterly different. I mean, for me at least, it always comes in a sort of flash, you know, like seeing the purple swamp hen came from seeing these wonderful painted garden frescoes from Pompeii in the British Museum exhibition about Pompeii. Mm. And there was this bird that I couldn't identify, which I then discovered was called a purple swamp hen.
Nice.
And so seeing that gave me the idea there must have been purple swamp hens at the fall of Pompeii, and what was it like from their point of view? And a short story for me is always like that. It's just a sort of flash that comes, and then you work out how to... what exactly the story is that it's a prompt for.
Mm. Phil Thack, you had a lot of fun with that story.
Mm. It was fun, yes. I had to find out a bit of what Roman life was like, and it comes across as fairly distasteful, yeah.
Yes, that came through with relish, I thought. Mm. Absolute relish. Mm. So, you felt that perhaps your short stories had been done now. Do you feel that you're going to come back to the short story form? Is there
a kind of an interaction? I've got a feeling they may have left me. None of them have stirred since the last ones there. So that they may have gone again. I'm very curious. When I started out my writing life, I wrote for children. I wrote for children for a number of years, and then for a bit wrote for both adults and for children. And then the children's books left me, rather in the way that later on short stories did. I just found I couldn't do them anymore. I rather think that has again happened. Yes, I haven't. Children's books left me long ago. I haven't written a children's book for about 35 years. But the short stories, probably that's it, yeah.
Okay. We relish these ones. Which is your favourite one in the collection?
Well, it's hard to say, really, and I never know that it's up to the writer to say. I do quite like the one that I read a bit from, License to Kill, yeah.
Mm.
I worked at that for a long time, sort of trying to get it right, and it's quite short, but every word had to be right. Mm-hmm. It was actually broadcast on Radio 4, and it had to be cut down, and that is incredibly difficult to do, to cut down a short story. I had to lose, I think, 200 words. And the short story shouldn't have a word to lose. I mean, it should be tight and ready.
It should be.
So that was a real challenge.
Great. In What You Think You Were, there is a character who's looking for answers in the past, really, and she's researching her family's history, and she kind of meets her double in history.
Mm.
So there is a sense of the past reaching out and touching the present.
Well, it's almost like a ghost story. Yeah, she finds somebody with her own name and then nearly has an accident. It's an odd kind of story, yeah. Mm. And it's certainly about the interaction between past and present. But it's a sort of distorted form of ghost story, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is quite ghostly and yet completely grounded in kind of fact. But there's also something which I think you've been talking about, which is the relationship of dry historical facts to lived experience, because there are little interludes in that story where you're actually getting a glimpse into the past. And I think that's something that the fiction writer can do, can't they? They can give us a really lived, imaginative experience, which I think your stories do.
Yes, I mean, I've never written a historical novel, and I wouldn't. I have reservations about the historical novel. I mean, there are some that I admire hugely, and there are a few people who do it incredibly well. It can also be done incredibly badly, too, because I have huge doubts about whether you can actually possibly achieve the outlook of the past, whether you really can understand what somebody would think like, feel like in the 17th, 18th, 19th century, which is where my doubts lie.
Yeah, there's a discussion of that, isn't there, in Theory of Mind, where Martin, who is trying to explain to his wife that probably you couldn't possibly experience what people in the past have experienced or imagine it. Mm. And that seems to be a really good trope in the story. But I think you give us a glimpse really into other worlds, into other imaginations. And I think these stories are wonderful, as you say, snapshots with a really strong...
Well, that's what you're trying to do, I think, in the short story, rather in the way they come to you with a sort of flash of inspiration. You've got to try and keep that sense of immediacy and put them across as a... Yes, you know, that's why they're such a valuable form of fiction. Mm. I think they're a short, fragmented form of fiction, which can, in the hands of the masters, have been as powerful as anything.
Well, I think in your hands they are masterful. So thank you very much for this collection.
Oh, well, thank you,
Penelope, and thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank
you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.